The Athletic.
Totally Football Show European Edition with Belgium. Scott Parker's In Bruges remake. Will he be a hit or will they soon be shot of him? Ligue 1, Lance Armstrong and make PSG look dopey. Spain, High Liga and what the Spanish think of Mateo Llorente. And Serie A returns with Juve in a scandal that may not finish well, much like Inter's front line as they prepare to face Napoli on Wednesday. It's all coming up in this Totally Football Show. Tuesday, 3rd of January. And what's this, listener? That's right. It's the Euro crew back from their travels. I'm talking James Horncastle.
Hello.
Julien Laurens.
Hello.
Alvaro Romeo.
Hello, hello.
And Rafa Honigstein, even though he doesn't need to be here, does he, Rafa?
Why?
I mean, no, it's nice that he's come, but there's no Bundesliga until what? Late March?
April? 20th.
You've just given Rafa holidays, an excuse not to come on to the show for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, he's here, but is he?
I just couldn't stay away, James. couldn't stay away.
It's been so long. It's been so long, or a minute, as they say. Not since, what, November? Because then there was that whole World Cup thing and then the final with France. Oh, Jules, how are you getting on?
You don't need to go there. I don't understand. This is not about the World Cup, is it?
You're right. No, and anyway, at least there's PSG to console.
Anyway, Jules won because I remember being sat behind Jules at Argentina Croatia, and Jules was just singing along with all the Argentina fans. So, you know, I'm not sure Jules was a French supporter in that World Cup final anymore.
I was sat with like in the. In the side of the press box with all the South American, Argentines, journalists and broadcasters and everything for the final. So every time Argentina scored, they all got up, like, literally all together, starting shouting and celebrating, kissing each other, blah, blah, blah. And then when we scored, I was the only one shouting, but I was shouting very, very loud.
Were you insulting them, Jules?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I was glad, I just couldn't understand the like Paris slang kind of thing.
Jules, did you do Argentine TV?
I did Argentine TV.
How many different nationalities of TV did you do while in Qatar?
I did France, USA, Canada, Jamaica, Pakistan, Argentina, Mexico.
Yeah.
And I think that's it, yeah.
Wow. England.
And England. Okay. And England. I'll try my best to be as busy as possible over there.
Yeah, nice. You even left us some voice notes for the Totally Football Show as well.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Because producer Charlie reminded me. Otherwise, I would have probably been like drinking.
No, I mean, we were just happy to hear from you. Anyway.
What's the Totally Football Show?
No, never. You're my priority forever.
We, Jules. It's an us thing. Anyway. This is getting awkward, listener. Let's get on to some moments of the weekend, remember? Where you all pick out your favourite bit of the weekend, except often it's the week or whatever. Rafa, you begin.
I don't even know what day of the week it is, let alone what moment of the week.
Okay. So Alvaro, I bet you've got one.
Well, I have one, yes. It only lasts 15 minutes, my moment of the week, but... It is from the very moment that...
Keep it short, Alvaro.
Yeah. It goes from the moment that the pilot says, hello, we're in Valladolid and we are taking off to Madrid, until a pilot says, hello, we have landed in Madrid. 15 minutes. And this is what Real Madrid did, basically. Instead of taking the train, which is 50 minutes from Madrid to Valladolid, instead of spending the night in Valladolid and taking the train the day after, they decided to... have a return ticket from Madrid to Valladolid-Madrid by plane. And, that was pretty controversial in Spain, but maybe not as controversial as it should be, because this is something that is pretty weird in these times. The fact that Real Madrid took a plane only for a 15-minute flight to go to Valladolid. They wonder, I guess, that it was a successful day or night for them, but it was definitely not very eco-friendly what they did.
They didn't go by plane, Alvaro.
I think that they did go by plane as well.
Oh, they went by plane as well.
And they went back by plane too.
Not the only controversy in La Liga since its return. We'll touch on some of the other big issues a bit later on. Jules, what about you?
My moment of the weekend was Frank Hayes, the Lens manager, gathering his players after the game against PSG that they won brilliantly as well, and took the microphone in the stadium when the stadium was still completely full and starting singing the song that they have in Lens to celebrate a win, which is Oh Lele, Oh La La, Mais qu'est-ce qui s'est passé? On les a chicotés. And he went from singing it quietly to louder and louder, and then at the end the whole stadium and all the players starting singing that song, which means what just happened, we destroyed them pretty much. And that was fitted because they played so well against PSG and beat them for the first time this season.
Extraordinary stuff. James Horncastle, Serie A gets underway Wednesday. Do you have a moment that was special in the meantime?
In the meantime? How long is the meantime?
Well, I don't know. Is there something from this weekend that you particularly enjoyed?
I finished a book.
Oh, right. What book was that, James Horncastle?
It was the fourth book in the Alexandria Quartet by Lawrence Durrell. It's very good. It's called Claire.
Claire. Nice. Okay. Let's get on to some Ligue 1.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. You can get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Ah, aujourd'hui, non, pas du tout. Attention, la récupération. Ouais,
Wow, Jules, what was going on there?
It's the third goal for Lens, the ball lost by PSG in the way Lens pressed, and straight after the start of the second half, it was 2-1 at the time, and Alexis Claude-Maurice scoring the third one in an incredible atmosphere, really, to make it 3-1. Already in a game that was massively dominated by Lens, it's not even if, like, you know, PSG were very much in it before that third goal. Just Lens showing again with that goal at the start of the second half why they'd been so much better than PSG through the first half as well. It was just a remarkable performance from them, like an absolute masterclass tactically, and but also in the intensity that they put in the game, how aggressive they were, how they prevented PSG from playing and finding Kylian Mbappe, a PSG team with no Neymar because he was suspended and no Messi because he was still, of course, on holidays. But also just the whole atmosphere, the everything that Lens did pretty much was perfect in that game, and they fully deserved that win.
It was a top two clash to kick off the new year in Liga, and it's left the gap between the two. PSG still on top, but 4 points now, which whether that constitutes a title race, I don't know, time will tell. But when you say they were spot on tactically, what was it they did? And just isolating Mbappe or the press or what?
Yeah. The press and the counter press was really the biggest thing. I mean, they do it all the time. It's not just for this game, but the 5-4-1 worked really well. And then the way they pressed and counter pressed, not all the time. They didn't try to overdo it and do it too much. Or just doing it all the time. They just did it exactly when needed, when they had to, and when they had to play a bit deeper, they did. But they just controlled every moment in that game so well, when usually against PSG, there's a time where you're under pressure and usually that costs you a goal. That was not the case. Even the goal that PSG scored, the Ekitike goal, was just a bit lucky because there was a foul on the goalkeeper that the referee didn't give. But everything else, they scored good goals, they created more chances. They were just, from the first minute to the last minute, so on it all the time. And that intensity, PSG was just not ready to match it. I don't think they looked that bothered, to be fair. And it looked like they just rested on Mbappe on his own to say, like, okay, go and win us the game because you're that good. But that was just not enough. And I think Galtier made a few mistakes in his team selection. Vitinha should have started 100%. But overall, there was just no match. Lens were far, far better.
Was that what happened on the previous match on Wednesday, when it took the 95th minute for PSG to get a winner against Strasbourg, with Neymar getting sent off for diving, that it was left to Kylian Mbappe to basically save the day?
Yeah, although they were much better than Strasbourg, they could easily have been like 3-0 before Strasbourg scored their deflected goal, and that was a bit lucky. But at least they played well. It was they had a kind of similar usually performance where they had a lot of the ball and they create and the pressure is relentless. This time was not the case at all. They were really, really, really beaten by a much better side. Seko Fofana, the Lens captain, who's Paris born and bred as well, was outstanding in that midfield. Every Lens player was fantastic.
Jules, will Messi coming back make things worse or better?
That's a good question.
I mean it.
Yeah, yeah. We don't know in what kind of mindset he will come back. You would think there's no, I mean, in a way, there's no reason why after the World Cup, you know, he doesn't keep playing like he did before the World Cup, where he was pretty good already. Then at the World Cup, where he was outstanding. I'm not saying, you know, when they go away at Reims or go, you know, away at Brest or something like that, but certainly the Champions League games against Bayern, you would expect Messi to still be very good, Neymar to still be very good, and Mbappe to still be very good. But you're right, we don't know what kind of mindset, what kind of fitness. He will come back in. He's back today as we record this. So I guess he's not going to be involved in the French Cup game at the weekend. But for the following game on the 11th, you would expect him to maybe play a bit. And then we will know a bit more, like, you know, if he wants to or not, if he's fit, if he's ready or not.
Jules, 4 points clear still. And this is only their first defeat of the season. Should PSG be worried or...
But yeah, Lens have only lost one game as well all season, and that was in the derby where against Lille, where they should not have lost, really. So 4 points, there's the much bigger goal difference for PSG. So I guess it's five, maybe, if you want to find an optimistic reason to say, like, yeah, PSG are okay. But they just can't repeat those kind of performances. Apart from Marseille, no other teams play like Lens, to be fair to them. But you also saw the flaws, you also saw the frustration that they had, the problem that they had. It's a game that in the second half they lost, they never had control of it, but they kind of lost their head a little bit as well because they were so dominated. Marco Verratti had a really, really tough game. Fabian Ruiz didn't exist at all, Soler neither. I mean, he was very, very poor. So it won't always be like that. But yeah, 4 points is not much, and Marseille are only like 8 points behind, so... Mm-hmm. I think we have a very interesting second half of the season.
Okay, Marseille are third, four behind Lens. They had a 2-1 win against Montpellier on Monday. Nuno Tavares scoring and getting sent off.
Yeah. One of the most, intelligent red card that you will obviously ever seen, because they're 2-0 up on the 87th minute. The ball is in Montpellier box and he does like literally a kung fu kick on a Montpellier defender from behind. Like literally you're thinking like, why? Nuno, why are you doing this? He would get Igor Tudor, as you know, just don't mess with Igor, was really not happy after the game. And I think Nuno probably got bollocked properly, and we'll get a fine, by the way, for that stupid red card. In the end, it didn't cost them because they conceded a penalty a few minutes later, but they still won the game 2-1. But why would you do this at 2-0 up in the opposition's box in the 87th minute? It's just beyond me.
Extraordinary. A Lyon update, Laurent Blanc, Jules?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they turned a corner against Brest just after Christmas. Brilliant win. And then everybody got a bit excited saying, oh, yeah, this is a good team with good players. And then they go on and lose at home against Clermont 1-0, where they were shocking. They were terrible. And you think, like, well, this is the story of their season. They're just not a very good team. They're in eighth position, Clermont 9. This is their level. They can't even win in their own stadium against a team like Clermont. And despite having changed managers already, having changed owners as well, by the way, having really, really good players, they just can't do it. So I'm not even sure that second half of the season will be much better from them, because there's something clearly wrong about it.
And Alexandre Lacazette is out injured now.
Yeah, as well. They lost Lacazette. I mean, some would say that they've lost him earlier because, I mean, the whole collective is so poor that I'm not really sure what he can do in that team anyway. But yeah, he got an hamstring problem. Again, they're playing the Cup this week, so it's not too bad if he's missing this weekend. And then they've got the league back. But in the league, if they don't qualify for Champions League next season, they're in big trouble again.
Jules, so there's a change of ownership after... Well, how long was Jean-Michel Aulas in charge of that club?
Yeah, 27 years, I think.
Wow.
Maybe. Yeah, I think 87 or 86 he bought the club, something like that, maybe even a bit more. And yeah, he finally decided to sell. John Textor, who owns Botafogo, for example, part of Crystal Palace, the American, as businessman, has come along. It took a long time because he clearly was skint, didn't have the money or enough money to do it. So he was supposed to do it at the beginning of September. Then he was, don't worry, sold goods. October will be fine. Then he still could not get the extra pennies for it. So they said, okay, no, November will finally be the good month. And then eventually in December, somehow he managed to get a few quids there and there.
Christmas time.
Yeah. Exactly. to buy the club. So you know, let's see what he does with it now.
Is it a bit sad that Jules, I mean, that's part of the French football landscape gone.
Yeah, it is sad. It's only the end of an era. I think wanted to cash in. I think there's just no doubt. You know, they sold the club for 780 million, I think, which is a lot of money, really. It was more the part of two other big shareholders in the club who sold their part, but Olas also sold some of his and kept a little bit of it. So he's still involved in the club. You know, he's one of those guys that can't really just stop it completely. So he still needs to be involved, which he will be. But yeah, it's the end of an era. It's another American owner in European football for the big clubs. So let's see what happens. I think a lot of the fans were very excited when back in June it happened. But the fact that he struggled to get the whole amount of money, that there was a lot of sort of dark areas, a little bit of, okay, what is he doing now? What's happening? Why is he not done? Why is he not the owner now? I think put a bit of doubt in some of the fans' mind about really not so much his motivation, but okay, if he doesn't have the money, then what is that saying for the investment that is supposed to come and things like that? So we will have to see.
Okay. Jules, just to finish off, immediately below Lyon and Clermont Foot in Le Table are Reims.
In the classement.
Oui, c'est ça. Reims.
Yeah.
Who have had a remarkable run of unbeaten results in the last 8 games under their new manager. Tell us why he's so unusual.
Yeah, he's so unusual because Will Steele, who's a young, very young Belgian, I think he's 33, who used to be the assistant
30,
of...
30, I believe.
Or 30 maybe even. Yeah. I thought he was 33.
No, decided 30, to take right. up coaching after playing computer games as a teenager.
That's right. Very bright guy who had a couple of clubs in Belgium before, but yeah, you're right, it was very much like an unexpected kind of career pathway, if you want, and then became the assistant coach to Oscar Garcia. Then Garcia and Reims decided to part ways, if you want, for different reasons. So Reims said, okay, well, take the club as an interim coach. He said, yeah, but I don't have my badges. They said, it's okay, you can still be on the bench, but we'll have to pay a fine. Which is, I think, around 20,000 euros every game that your coach on your bench doesn't have the right badges. But because he's done so well, so I think he's 8 games unbeaten now, four wins and four draws, or 5 wins and 3 draws. They said, well, we have to keep you. So he's doing his badges now. In the meantime, they still pay the fine for every single game. But he's been outstanding. They were good, I thought, at Lille yesterday, for example, even if maybe in the end they were a bit lucky to get a draw because Lille also had a lot of chances. But he plays really proactive football. There's a lot of movement. The players really enjoy it. And for someone who's, as we said, is only 30 years old, it's really, really remarkable.
Mm. Will Still versus Lille. Yeah, nice. All right. There you go. Anything else about Ligue 1, Jules?
Just one last thing. If you haven't heard of Elias Benseguir, yeah, he's the new prodigy at Monaco. Only 17 and 10 months. He would be 18 in February, at the end of February. And he scored 2 goals. Amazing on his Ligue 1 debut, coming off the bench against Auxerre straight after Christmas. And he was again outstanding in the New Year's Eve fixture against Brest. So yeah, remember the name, Elias Benseguir, 17 years old.
Elias Benseguir.
Yeah.
What's his real name?
Oh,
Elias, sorry, right, my mistake. Okay. Hey, while we're on the subject of unusual coaching appointments, your attention, listener, may have been attracted this week by Scott Parker's return to the world of management at Champions League club Bruges. What on earth's behind this? Let's dial up our Belgian football correspondent, Christophe Terreur. Christophe, no sweat, no glory is written on my body. Not my words, but those of Scott Parker, who is the new manager of Club Bruges. First of all, what happened to Carl Hufkens?
Well, yeah, he was sacked 2 days after Christmas basically after we last called had a podcast on Club Brugge when they were almost going through, I think, in the Champions League. Yeah, they lost a few games. They lost their momentum. They were not playing well anymore. Yeah, and suddenly after a few disastrous defeats, Club Brugge decided to get rid of him because it was not working with a part of the players anymore. He had some difficulties with some of the star players. And so, they decided to get rid of him after only 6 months in charge and after an historical qualification for the second round of the Champions League. It's weird, but that's how it goes in Belgian football sometimes, where managers are treated like they are in the Italian league. Basically, there are lots of sackings in the Belgian league. It's usual, basically.
Mm. All right, well, that's that explained. But how did they come up with Scott Parker as his replacement?
Well, as clubs always say, they compiled a list with young modern managers, and the name of Steven Gerrard was on it too. They inquired, but he deemed to be too expensive. So Kasper Hjulmand, the Danish national manager, he was one of the names they inquired for too. But he said he wasn't available. Roberto Martinez said he wasn't available for Club Brugge, that he was just waiting for something else. And then the name of Scott Parker popped up. And Vincent Manard, the CEO of Club Brugge, he talked with, for instance, Dennis Odoi, who played under Parker at Fulham. And that's how they got convinced about Scott Parker. But I think somebody must have offered him, like it happens nowadays in football, where agents know. There was already pressure on Hoefkens, and everybody knew from the week before that if he'd lost points against OHL on Boxing Day, that he would go. So I think they'd already made the homework in the days before, and maybe an agent offered him, or maybe in Belgium they think highly of Scott Parker. But for most neutral fans, he was quite unknown. Who's Scott Parker, they said. That was the first reaction.
Okay, well, I guess they're going to find out. In terms of the team, is it a good squad that he inherits? Fourth in the Jupiler Pro League, but what kind of team has he inherited, and what's the target, to get them back on top?
Well, for Brugge, it's always important to get into the Champions League, basically, because they've invested heavily in their squad and in wages and stuff like that the last few years, because they've always been successful. So the Champions League is very important for them. So they have to get first in the first four, the playoff system that Scott Parker, he did know about it, but he couldn't explain yesterday how it worked, and he still had to find out how our weird league system works. So they have to be in top four, and then they play a playoff under the best four, and they have to be in the top four. They will always make top four with that score, I think. But for Brugge, it's important to become champions again, basically. And that's what the goal is. They're 12 points behind Genk, who've had a great season till now. They have no European football either, so they can just focus on the league. And the points will be split up in two when the playoffs start. But anyway, it's still 6 points behind. And he starts, the first game is at Genk, at the league leader. So he has already a difficult start. But Brugge expect them to be champions. And the squad is good. It has proven to be a good squad, like a decent squad. They have experience with Mignolet, Van Aken, who've all excelled in the Champions League. You have Noah Lang, who was in the Dutch squad, who was not good on the Hoefkens. He's been injured. He had some issues with Hoefkens. They have the Danish international Skov also. So it's a good squad, but they were underperforming for the last 2 months. So they basically need somebody who motivates them and gets them to play football again, because the football was not good over the last maybe 2-3 months, even when they were performing in the Champions League, where they were playing basically as the underdog, which is quite different. In Belgium, everybody expects Brugge to be the dominant team. In the Champions League, they didn't have to do it. So that's why they were good at the beginning of the season, but not in the league. They haven't really convinced in the Belgian league, and that's what the board want to change, basically. That's why they employed Parker. They want to see more football again.
Excellent. All right, Christoph. Well, it's a fascinating development. Thank you for giving us the background to it.
You're welcome.
There you go. No sweat, no glory. Scott Parker and at Bruges. They're taking on Benfica, of course, in the last 16 of the Champions League. Ooh, Benfica side who may be without the services of Jules' favourite player. Maybe not anymore. I don't know. Enzo Fernandez, is he still your favourite player, Jules?
Yeah, I still love him.
You do?
I still love him. Yeah,
Are you going to be loving him at Chelsea? Is that going to happen, do you think?
I think there's a big chance. I mean, he was always down to Benfica to decide if they were ready to let him go now or if they wanted to just hold on him for a bit longer until the summer, because obviously they are also still in the Champions League, because the gap at the top with Porto was reduced this week. In the league, for example, they still have, I think, they're still 4 points clear, but you know, it's getting closer. And without him, it would not be the same team at all. So it looks like Rui Costa has decided to accept the offer from Chelsea, which is the release clause, slightly above even the release clause that they had for him anyway. And that he will go. Yeah. So it's an incredible transfer from a Chelsea point of view. We can debate if he was worth the money or not at that age.
How much is it?
127 million euros.
Mm. People are going to ask the question about financial fair play. Is that a question I should ask you?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's not one for now anyway, because at the moment Chelsea were not under scrutiny on that sense, and so I think for now they can spend the money. It might come back to buy them a little bit later, but again, the Premier League clubs bring so much money in that even when the new format of the financial fair play comes in the following season, then I still think they should be okay.
Any other big transfer stories we should mention on this Tuesday, the 3rd of January?
Benoit Badiachil, the Monaco defender, obviously on his way to Chelsea. That's a much cheaper one than Enzo. It's only 40 million euros. He's 21. He's left-footed. He's really, really talented, but he's still quite young in the way he plays and some of the mistakes that he makes. So I don't know if in Chelsea's mind, this is one for now, or if it's one for a bit later, like that new policy that they have of signing those young players more to develop and then use a bit later, like Andre Santos, the young Brazilian midfielder that they've just signed, who's only 18. But Yashil has played in the Champions League, has played in Europe, has played with France, he's got two caps, has played in Ligue 1 a lot of games, so he's more experienced than Andre Santos, for example, but still, he's still a young player who makes mistakes, but they thought that's the right time to get him. So 40 million, Badiachil from Monaco.
Fair enough. Rafa, anything bubbling away in the Bundesliga?
Well, there's the big question about who's going to be the Bayern goalkeeper while Manuel Neuer is nursing his broken leg. They've asked Kevin Trapp, they've asked Jan Sommer. Of course, Alexander Nübel at Monaco would be their preferred choice because he is a Bayern player on loan. But negotiations with Monaco have been very difficult. They don't want to release him halfway through the season. Nübel is also reluctant to just come back for 6 months and then find themselves exactly in the same position, just without much chance of being the number one. So it looks more like they'll have to go for a, shall we say, creative solution in getting somebody in for 6 months who then maybe wants to move on again. And both Jan Sommer and Kevin Trapp have been approached by Bayern. It looks most likely to be Jan Sommer at this point, unless they can find some very late agreement with Monaco. They've set themselves a deadline until the 6th of January before they go to Qatar, of all places, for their winter training camp. I don't think an agreement with either Nübel or Monaco is likely at this point, so Sommer would be my bet as the most likely guy to come in.
Okay. Bundesliga returning, as you mentioned, on the 20th. Of this month. Currently Bayern leading ahead of Freiburg, with Borussia Dortmund in third. Rafa, is that right?
No, they're only fifth.
Fifth. But they have got Sebastian Haller returning to training, which is terrific news after another operation following his testicular cancer diagnosis back in the summer. But looks like he's finally able to play again, which is great.
Yeah, they'll be very careful to not rush him, but he will do some of the early exercises and tests that they're conducting this week ahead of their training camp in Marbella. And the hope is that he will take part in some of the sessions, but I think it'll be a while before he'll be fully reintegrated as far as team training is concerned. But absolutely fantastic news.
Mm, excellent. All right, next up, Serie A.
This is the Totally Football Show, sponsored by LiveScoreBet, the home of squads. Squads is a weekly free-to-play game. You reveal five players across the week which make up your squad, and you can earn cash each time they score in the selected games. The cash amount is decided by LiveScoreBet's prize wheel and can range from 10p up to £50 per goal, which you can spend once the final player is revealed. Find out more and play squads for yourself for free at LiveScoreBet.com or by downloading the LiveScoreBet app on Android and iPhone. It's over 18s only and full terms and conditions apply. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Osimhen che riesce a difendere bene il pallone di tacco, lo dà all'indietro molto bene per Lozano. Ci sarebbe spazio per Zielinski interno all'area di rigore. Il controllo, il destro, il gol bellissimo del 2-0.
That there was Napoli just before Serie A broke for the World Cup and that back in November, winning 3-2 against Udinese. 8 points clear at the top of the table of Milan now as we prepare for Serie A to return with a bang on Wednesday. It's games all day, starting with Milan early doors, 11:30, I think. That game kicks off UK time against... Am I right in saying who are they playing? Is it Salernitana?
Salernitana.
Yeah. Other games to look out for? Well, Juventus against Cremonese, because Juventus off the field have had a very busy time of it in December with their entire board resigning. And, of course, the big game in the evening, which sees Napoli and Inter head-to-head at San Siro. James?
Yeah, be interesting to see if Napoli can pick up where they left off. They have lost their two friendly games against Villarreal and Lille, even though they've been at pretty much full strength. I think some of the players lacking a bit of match rhythm, fitness. Kvaratskhelia, who's been the revelation in European football. People quick to forget that, given that we've had a World Cup in the middle. But Napoli still, at least in competitive terms, the only undefeated team in one of Europe's big leagues at this moment in time, after Benfica lost before Christmas and PSG too. So I think there's a lot of intrigue going into this game, because cast your mind back to last season, the first team to beat Napoli was Inter at San Siro. And psychologically, I think this game will be quite important, because if Napoli were to lose on their first game back, we would already be talking about, is this a big test of their mettle? Are their nerves going to be shredded by that? So yeah, we'll have to see what condition Lautaro Martinez is in. Will he actually finish some chances?
Do you think he'll be back playing? Because the talk I'd seen was that he was still effectively out of the picture, and it was going to be Lukaku returning.
Yeah, Lukaku decided to give it's that time of year again. He decided to give an interview to Sky Italia, in which he kind of said that he wants to stay at Inter after this season. That the injury that he had was a really bad injury. That I think the tendon to one of his muscles had been completely severed. It needed some time to get better. He scored on one of his games back, the friendly against Regina, which was the Inzaghi brothers get together. Shout out to Pippo Inzaghi, because Regina are doing very well in Serie B. It looks like he might take another team up, having already done that with Benevento. But back to Inter. Yeah, Lautaro was back. He gave a press conference, as all these Argentine players do. They get this special treatment. They have to speak to the media before returning to training. And he said he is ready. Lautaro didn't hold back before the World Cup, unlike some of the other Argentine players in Serie A, like Paredes and Di Maria, who, the slightest knock said that they needed 3 weeks to recover in order to be ready for the World Cup. Lautaro played every minute. So I have a feeling that if he's ready, he will be chomping at the bit to play. The only other thing is that Dzeko, I suppose, has been scoring in these mid-season warm-ups, if you want to call them that.
It's quite a thought, though, isn't it? Lautaro and Lukaku, what a pair of deadly finishers that would be against Napoli. If Napoli win this game, yikes.
Yikes. I mean, look, we're not halfway through the season yet, so there's still a lot of football to play. But to have that lead, for Juventus to be in kind of disarray off the pitch, whether that will impact on them on the pitch, we'll have to see. Sometimes it can be a galvanizing force. I mean, I think one of the regrets about Italy not being at the World Cup was that a scandal happened, and usually they win tournaments when there's a scandal, as was the case in 82 and 2006. So a real big missed opportunity for Italy in that regard.
Would you tell us about the scandal, though, James?
So Juventus' board resigned midway through Brazil against Switzerland, which was quite a big thing to have the kind of news desk ringing you during that game.
For any journalists who were covering both Brazil and football, Switzerland, quite busy.
And Argentina, don't forget Argentina.
And they resigned as a kind of precautionary defensive measure. After the findings of this Prisma investigation were wrapped up and sent to the prosecutors in Turin, we've spoken about this before. Juventus have been accused of false accounting, filing false reports to the stock exchange, false invoicing to agents. They have said in their statements that they believe that they've acted appropriately within the context of how football is run. That's their defence. But it was seismic when particularly Andrea Agnelli resigned, because let's not forget that when the Super League flopped, Agnelli stayed. People thought he was going to resign after that. So this is serious. All kinds of things are happening. So UEFA had agreed, I think, a settlement agreement with Juventus for financial fair play. They said they're going to have to look into that again, given the findings of this investigation. The Italian Football Federation, which had held an investigation into inflated transfer fees and had then lost that case and then lost the appeal, have asked for it to be reopened as well. So that's significant because it can mean that sporting penalties come back into play if they are successful in reopening the case. I think that will be heard in mid-January as to whether they can look into Juventus and the other clubs involved again. So that would mean maybe points penalties, or if you listen to some of the more extremist legal experts who Gazzetta and Corriere go to, could even mean relegation. And then whether this goes to trial or not as well in a civil case, which is much more serious. So there's a new board that has been appointed, which will be ratified in the middle of this month. And we'll have to see what repercussions that has as well in terms of transfer strategy, because it looks like they won't be able to do any business in January. And it looks, we'll have to see what it means for them in the summer as well, whether Juventus have to downscale, downsize, you know, whether the club is even put up for sale. That has been suggested in some parts of the media. I think that's, again, because Italy weren't at the World Cup, there's been a lot of pages to fill in the Italian papers.
Right.
And so there's been a lot of doom mongering. That's not to say this isn't serious, but I mean, for this to happen when it's this 2023 is the 100th, it's the centenary of the Agnellis buying Juventus and being the longest serving owners of a football club in European football.
Right.
So I my guess, James, would be that they would see this out.
Okay. Statistically, it's quite likely that the centenary would fall in the middle of the big scandal because, I mean, they have one every, 4 years or so?
I mean, Italian football has
one every... Astonishing track record, that club, really. there's no club like them in the world, surely. Juventus, just... Time after time.
No, it is pretty remarkable. And so this watch this space, because it's a story that's not going away.
Mm. Well, you are, though, James. You've got to go and do things. So we salute you now, Mr. Horncastle. You'll be back on BT with our Sunday night game this coming Sunday the 8th.
Looking forward to this one. Milan-Roma.
Milan-Roma.
Yeah.
Wow.
As long as Jose hasn't accepted the Portugal job yet.
Right. But he might do that in his spare time.
I mean, it's great for that story to come up just when he might be renegotiating his contract with Roma. But there we go.
All right.
See you on BT Sport.
Listeners. See you on BT Sport. All right. Next up, La Liga.
We're all driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to the Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson, sponsored by LiveScore Bet. You can get the latest football betting odds at LiveScoreBet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Camavinga, ojo, Camavinga, 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 Camavinga para el segundo, Camavinga, qué fuerte la pone Camavinga, Karim para marcar, gol. Gol, 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 gol.
Álvaro, La Liga's come back early this year. We've had loads of action already, and oh my word, Real Madrid and Barcelona tied at the top of the table after this weekend's action. What do you want to talk about first?
Yeah, it was a good restart for Real Madrid, definitely. Not so much for Barcelona, because Real Madrid managed to level on points with Barcelona at the top of the table. If La Liga would finish today, Real Madrid would be the champion, by the way, because remember that in the case of being level on points, it's the head-to-head what matters. But anyway, we are not at that point yet. But yeah, Real Madrid weren't particularly great against Valladolid. As I said before, probably the most interesting news about all that game against Valladolid was the fact that Real Madrid traveled by plane to Valladolid. But there were some conundrums over there, like, for example, the fitness of Karim Benzema, who unfortunately wasn't in the World Cup at the end. And, you know, he didn't look particularly sharp, to be honest, but it can only help the fact that he scored a couple of goals. One was a penalty goal and the other one a nice finish after a very good ball control. And then Vinicius looked sharp again, just taking on players one-on-one. Apparently Vinicius heard in the stands some racist chants as well, and if La Liga thinks that there is a case in there, we'll investigate for sure. But it was a very important victory for Real Madrid.
On the Vinicius thing, I mean, there seemed to be quite a lot of evidence of racist abuse in that game. And I thought I saw a statement from La Liga saying that they felt that it was within the context of normal, I wouldn't say fan banter, but in the context of supporting their team, and they weren't going to take any action on it.
That's the thing, that Vinicius couldn't believe that. La Liga had the chance, for example, to take home some action, probably, against Atletico de Madrid when ahead of the derby from Madrid, Vinicius got plenty of racist chants and stick outside of Wanda Metropolitano, which is why La Liga didn't take some action, because it happened outside of the ground. Mm. But if it happens inside of the ground, and there is some evidence, I don't understand why La Liga is not doing it. Probably because they think that the evidence is not strong enough, maybe the audio is not perfect, or whatever it is there is not too incriminating, but you know, in these cases I think that being very strict and making sure that this doesn't happen again should be the norm. And if there is some little evidence that Vinicius got this again this season, well, it should be prosecuted or persecuted.
Absolutely. Okay. Benzema, as you mentioned, with a brace, which takes his tally to 32 goals for the calendar year, that game coming just at the tail end of 2022. Barcelona, meanwhile, dropping points in the derby with Espanyol.
Yeah, and with Lewandowski in the lineup, which is something that it's worth mentioning, because he got a 3-game ban in the last game before the World Cup against Osasuna, because basically he got sent off, and while he was leaving the pitch, he touched his nose a couple of times, which is apparently a derogatory gesture that we don't know of in Spain, but in Central Europe and in Germany as well, apparently it means that the referee has been a little bit cocky or arrogant. That 3-game suspension was lifted because Barcelona appealed it to a higher court. And now Espanyol is appealing the game because they understand that Lewandowski should have not played against Barcelona. That is very unlikely to prosper. But anyway, when Lewandowski got his ban lifted, it was just temporary. It was a temporary measure. So there has been a game of appealing from Barcelona, counter-appealing from Espanyol. As I said before, this is not going to prosper. And there are two options now, that Lewandowski gets finally his 3-game suspension lifted, no matter what. And the more probable one, that Lewandowski doesn't get his 3-game suspension lifted, and therefore he will miss 3 games at some point this season. Who knows if that will happen against Atletico de Madrid this weekend. But Lewandowski or not, Barcelona couldn't beat Espanyol in a local derby. They started scoring, but then Marcos Alonso made a penalty, and Espanyol got the equalizer. And yeah, the same problems of Barcelona show up again. They've got some issues in the compositional aspect of the game, so basically attacking, creating, everything is quite flat. And it is very telling as well that Barcelona has conceded only 6 goals this season, which is fantastic, but they haven't been able to profit that better than Real Madrid, because Real Madrid defensively has been poorer. In attack, they haven't been particularly better, but then they are level on the table. So Barcelona is not managing, you know, their differences in the game very well, the fact that they have left many clean sheets, and it's still too dependent on Lewandowski. You see Barcelona, and you see that the midfielders and the attackers as well, all of them, starting by Dembélé, Ferran Torres, Ansu Fati, to higher degrees or different degrees of responsibility, of course, but they are not providing all the goals that Lewandowski is indeed providing.
Mm. Lewandowski having problems with arrogant referees. Who was the official this time around?
The big Mateu Laoz, the big man. Yeah. I mean, everyone knows him now in Europe. He has become a celebrity. I don't know, maybe he's the biggest celebrity after Pierluigi Collina, but for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what's the view on him? I mean, that legendary Netherlands-Argentina game at the World Cup, which he pretty much matched. I think it was 17 yellows and 1 red that he showed in that game in Qatar, and Saturday 16 yellows and 2 reds.
Look, the view on Mateo is as it follows. Basically, he has become a celebrity. And as Spanish football fans, we have been talking about this referee for a very long time. He's a polarizing figure. Some players like Mateu Laoz, believe it or not, because on paper, he's a manager, he's a referee, who let the game flow. On paper, but lately he hasn't done that. He has done right the opposite. He has had an hyperbolic amount of decisions. And, you know, all the things that Mateo could be good for, like, for example, he lets the play flow, he can be even a little bit entertaining because he does plenty of gestures, he beckons the players a lot and all that. He is not doing that. And when he doesn't do that, he becomes a very annoying referee. because he takes too much part on the game and he doesn't let the game flow. Again, this is an oddity. Mateu was the kind of referee who was letting the game flow. Yeah, he has become a celebrity, and against Espanyol, he didn't do a good job. Not at all, not at all.
This weekend, then, as you mentioned, Atletico Madrid are taking on Barcelona. Is João Félix going to stay at Atletico Madrid is one question. And also, what do you think is going to happen at the top of the table with Villarreal, meanwhile hosting Real Madrid? Villarreal, who themselves had a derby against Valencia at the weekend, winning 2-1 with Pepe Reina in goal.
The big Pepe Reina in goal. And, you know, it was good for him that Villarreal won. Pepe Reina had been the Villarreal goalkeeper at the beginning of the 21st century. He is obviously a very veteran figure in there. And in my opinion, he can offer different things to Geronimo Rulli, the other goalkeeper of Villarreal, because Pepe Reina, I think that behind the posts, on the post, is still better than Geronimo Rulli. But that's another story. Edinson Cavani scored for Valencia. It was a beautiful goal, by the way, unstoppable. That finish was amazing, amazing. The bad thing for Valencia is that they lost Nico, the player on loan from Barcelona. He had a strong injury and he is likely to miss the next 3 months of La Liga and also the Super Cup. Let's don't forget that Valencia is playing in the Super Cup now in 2 weeks' time, and that's a sensitive absentee for Valencia. Villarreal won. It's good for Quique Setién as well, because let's don't forget that when this man took charge of Villarreal, he was already disliked by the Villarreal fanbase. And 10 days after he took charge, after losing the first 3 games, he was hearing by Villarreal stands that he should leave. So, you know, anything that is 3 points for Quique Setién is very refreshing. And when it comes to João Félix, look, they are trying to... Atletico wouldn't be too unhappy to see him go on loan. If it was a transfer, obviously it would be way better, because you know, it's a hit and miss with João Félix and his relationship with Simeone. But I cannot say whether he will go or not, because on the other hand, what Atletico is trying to do is something quite expensive for whoever wants to get him. Apparently they want to send him on loan this season, and that would cost a lot of money to whoever wants to get him, so maybe it's not worth the price. But anyway, yeah, he scored the other day against Elche, and personally I think that João Félix can only make Atletico better. He had a decent World Cup, but on top of that, with altogether with Antoine Griezmann, is probably the most technical player in there, in Atletico de Madrid's striking line. Much more since Mateus Cunha left. Atletico lost a little bit of players in that department, so I think that João Félix can be important this season.
Okay, excellent. Well, we'll keep across all the transfer stories as they build throughout January. Anything else from La Liga before we wrap it up, Alvaro?
Absolutely, James. I have to tell you this. I mean, Lucas Pérez, do you remember the former Arsenal player? We all remember him. He didn't do too well at Arsenal. He spent a couple of seasons, I think. But anyway, his journey in football is not over at all. And probably he is going to start his nicest journey in football, because he has moved from Cádiz, a team in the top flight, to Deportivo de la Coruña, a team in the third tier of Spanish football. He is a long time Deportivo de la Coruña fan. He was making around 2 million after tax for Cádiz. This is what was reported. And he has decided to pay his transfer to Deportivo de la Coruña. His wages will go down a lot as well. And he will play for Deportivo de la Coruña, because Deportivo is not enjoying a good time. And he wants to send back Deportivo de la Coruña at least to the second division of Spanish football. So basically this is a man who has made a personal and financial sacrifice just to play for Deportivo de la Coruña. He's the club he's supporting.
What a lovely story, Alvaro. If only more high-profile players changing clubs in January took a similar approach to choosing their next destination. Anyway, all right. Well, best of luck to him and Depor. And that's where we'll wrap it up for this week on the Totally Football Show's European edition. We return next Tuesday. Many thanks to everyone who took part. Rafa, James, Jules, Alvaro, producer Charlie, you listener, and all the lovely footballers for the lovely football they played. Much more of it to come. We'll see you next Tuesday with our verdict on all of that. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by LiveScore Bet. Get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
The Athletic.